Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Reality Reno with Mitch and Mark. Marky, while we've been complaining about endless rain here in Sydney, thinking we're doing it tough, oh my God.
I know, I think the whole nation has been shocked with what we've seen in Lismore. Our hearts go out to the people in Lismore. And as we're recording this right now, people are waiting to be rescued.
Absolutely. And then, but Brisbane River is bursting its banks again, causing devastation up there as well. It's up and down the East Coast and heading our way.
Heading our way here in Sydney, we're expecting it. So, you know, what's the song say? We're a land of drought and flooding rain, but my God, this is just out of the norm. Like, so far, you can't even think about it. Amateur, I think sometimes too, the aftermath of the cleanup, and our show is reality. Reno, we talk about renovations. Well, those people, the industry is so smashed by COVID and supply chains, they're going to be smashed again. So how do we help them get back into housing when the housing industry is already under so much pressure? I don't know how that will work.
Maybe that's something we can tackle in the coming weeks, Mark. But meanwhile, offshore, there's the Ukraine situation with Putin-led Russia causing devastation, destroying people's lives with intent.
You'd never think in our lifetime, after everything historically we've seen, the wars that have gone on there, we still have leaders who think war is the way to go.
And the United Nations sort of rallying, cutting Russia off, but is it enough to stop this monster?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Russia is a country that a number of people, of our friends, have been to have a look at, said they loved it. And now and then we've thought, well, wouldn't it be good to go and see historical places like St. Petersburg?
But, Marky, we haven't been game to go because as gay men, we are illegal there, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. We've made a decision that, you know, the laws in Russia are that as a same-sex couple or as gay men, lesbian women, that you are a criminal and that you can be charged and imprisoned. Now, this is something that we haven't seen in the West, you know, and it was bad enough that it still existed in the 60s and early 70s in the West, but it still exists now in countries around the world where gay people are being victimized, they're being made criminals. It justifies people's behavior where they bash people or they kill people because, you know, they're criminals. Now, I would never set foot in Russia because I'm not a criminal.
And meanwhile, back home, we are celebrating Mardi Gras this weekend by stark contrast.
So I think, you know, that's probably even more reason for us to celebrate the freedoms that we have as a country. And the hard work and that journey that so many people have fought to be able to have a celebration and be supported by our nation to celebrate diversity.
And whilst now Mardi Gras is all about a party, I think it started in 1976, the first parade.
I think it was around 78.
Around 78, okay. So the first parade was a protest for gay rights. Those people that marched in the first parade were bashed and were...
Well, it was at a time...
jailed?
Yes, a time when it was illegal to be gay. And so there are people from, you know, our generation, but earlier than our generation, who just being themselves meant that they were subject to criminal charges. There are people who still would have criminal records because they're gay. It seems bizarre. So we have come a long way.
We'll roll the clock forward and... You and I, Mark, as a gay couple, is seen as a different kind of normal, broadcast across Australian TVs on the block twice.
Yes.
Over two years, and celebrated. And so we are eternally thankful for those that came before us. But the work is not over. We've got more work to do, and we're doing our bit.
So much more. And, you know, it's interesting, which somebody said to us this week, I think maybe – so the block is televised around – the world in different nations. There are different countries that show the block. So I think potentially in Russia, how does Russia cope with the fact that there is a gay couple, a same-sex couple, on a TV show like that.
Yeah, let's just remember, though, Russia is a country of many people, not a country of one person like Putin.
True.
Because of his views, and he is a dictator.
Yes.
So because of his views, the Russian people are not necessarily behind him, and it's looking like they are revolting. True. As they revolted in the Mardi Gras parade and made a big move forward, which brings us to a bit of a link, a segue for our special guest today, who we will no doubt see in the Mardi Gras parade marching.
I know, can't wait to see her. Just as an aside, we're getting to march in the Mardi Gras parade, first time ever, so that will be fun.
At 60 is our first ever Mardi Gras parade march. Who would have thunk?
So our guest today is iconic on the Oxford Street strip, and we remember the first time we ever saw this person. It's one of the key performers in Oxford Street.
Chances are, if you've ever seen a drag show on the strip in Oxford Street in Sydney, and I'm sure you've seen her beyond that, also on
RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under.
Down Under. We are talking about none other than the delightful, the beautiful, the hilarious Maxie Shield. I am absolutely delighted to introduce our next guest. Our next guest is a star of the big stage in Oxford Street, but also the small screen with...
Well, an Australian icon, I would dare to say.
Yeah, but also RuPaul's Drag... No, fuck, what's it called?
I love it when he does this.
But you could have jumped in.
No, I'm not going to. Star of RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under.
And I must say, she was amazing. Welcome to Reality Reno with Mitch and Mark, Maxie Shield.
Hello, boys. We got there in the end, didn't we?
It takes a little time. It's like a lot of things, you know. It's worth the wait, really, isn't it? It's worth the wait.
I'm still sort of stay there. It's a bit stunned when, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race. It's like, shit, I watched the first episode ever. And now they're doing an Australian version and I was on it. It's crazy, just crazy.
It's interesting, isn't it? We're talking reality, Rena. Reality is part of that reality TV. I mean,
yeah.
Was it bizarre for you to go, oh, my God, here I am, and meeting RuPaul and that whole experience?
It was crazy because, you know, Drag Race fans are just, they're full on. They're like really diehard crazy sometimes. And it was rumored that we were going to get it probably about 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, I'm at the older end of the spectrum when it comes to drag. And I call myself a roast chook instead of an old chook. And the fans love to write a list. Oh, they love to write the top 10 girls they want to see on Drag Race Down Under. And I was never on the list.
Yeah.
So when I got the call, wow. I was like, are you sure? Are you sure? Yeah, it was very surreal sort of from the start. And then it was sort of like, okay, you're on, and it became a reality. And it was just like, shit, this is crazy.
Yes. Reality TV is a bit crazy. We want to talk to you a bit about what that experience was like in a moment.
Yeah.
But we've seen Maxie for so many years on Oxford Street, and Maxie evolve.
I suppose it's a little bit like us, people recognize us through the block stuff, yeah. Whereas and they assume that we know them a lot of the time because they feel they know us so well. Same goes for us with you. We've seen you on stage performing. Well, I came back to Australia in 2002. I lived overseas for a stint, and from my memory, you were there from the time I got back.
Yeah. So I started, it's my 25th drag anniversary this Mardi Gras.
25 years, wow.
25 years, I know, it is crazy. And you know what, I actually love that it's 25 years because I got to start at the tail end of the Priscilla era and the 90s and the Priscilla era in Sydney. I don't know if you experienced that, but it was just so fabulous. We had a long way to go still. Drag was this sort of local heroes and the Porsches and the Trudy Valentines and the Amelia Earheads, all these incredible drag queens were just these 10-foot tall Barbie dolls that I sat in the front row and just went, every Friday and Saturday night. It was crazy.
It was a crazy time around Priscilla when that came out
yeah.
around the world, which kind of such a huge hit, such a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
I remember I didn't live in Sydney, but I was in Melbourne, and coming backwards and forwards to Sydney, it was such a feel here, so much fun. And there was the Albury and the Imperial. I remember seeing Mitzi McIntosh.
Mitzi, Caroline Clark, Legs Galore. And it was different type of drag back then as well. It was just so much fun.
When you say it was different type of drag, how?
There was an appreciation for ugly drag. There was, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like Mitzi would do absolutely anything for the laugh.
Yes.
And you would see that. And there was a hierarchy, which is probably, you know, looking back in today's standards, probably isn't a good thing. But there was that thing that, you know, someone like Mogadonna would walk into a room and you'd sort of bow down almost.
Oh.
Because this great big glamazon would walk in and you'd just be like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Whereas now people are like, well, where'd you get your tits? Hey, where'd you get your wig?
So there was more of an acknowledgement of the people that went before or that created this kind of culture.
I guess there was a mystery. Because now with the internet, everyone knows your secrets. Everyone knows how to put makeup on and do a wig and put a look together. Whereas a drag queen would walk in and you wouldn't know unless you sat and watched her how she did her makeup or how she did a wig. So there was that element of mystery that sort of was so exciting.
I remember seeing, I've just had a flashback, my first ever drag performance. I think it was in 1980. I was there I was at this place called Stranded, which is below the Strand Arcade, which is now where JB Hi-Fi occupies the space. Stranded was this super cool nightclub. And then at, I think it was 1 a.m., everyone would sit down cross-legged at the front and they would play this weird music. And then this artistic drag performance would take place where they were quite equine and they were very thin and angular and not about being beautiful, about being almost freakish like women. Mm. But going back to that, it was amazing.
Do you know who that probably was? That was probably Teresa Green.
Right.
And Doris Fish. They were very edgy, very almost ghouly.
Yeah, artsy. It was very artsy.
Like
performance, which is actually interesting when you think drag as art and art performance and pushing boundaries.
Sure.
but I do remember around the same period, probably around 1980, going to Les Girls.
Oh.
And the drag performance, not that I was smart enough to know the difference at that time, but one was an artistic performance. The Les Girls were I understood it as these women.
Mm.
These transgender women that did physically look like beautiful women. I didn't even join them together then. Whereas now I think there's probably more of a visual crossover.
Very much the because Les Girls is sort of, it was almost like the tits and feather show from Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And they were all trans women that were on there. And it was sort of, it was so, I wish I was around to see Les Girls. I sort of started just before, just as it sort of closed. But they were sort of such a trailblazer in, not just for trans and drag, but just the gay community in themselves, because what they were doing was so, like, it was illegal to do what they were doing. And they would go in and they'd perform and then they'd walk outside and they'd get bashed by the same people that were watching the show and there was those stupid rules where you weren't allowed to wear a wig if you were a boy and, you know, you weren't allowed to – you had to have men's underwear on if you were dressed as a woman, you know. And I was lucky enough to work with Monique Kelly, who actually was a part of the Les Girls. She was part of the comedy section. And some of the stories, these women were just so strong and just living their lives, they girls' performers were absolutely incredible. And working with Monique Kelly, who was the comedian, some of the stories she would say, and, you know, some of the stories, there would be the sober versions, and then you'd get a couple of the boozers into her, a couple of scotch and sodas into her, and then the real stories would come out. And they were just, they were so exciting but horrifying at the same time, trying to, that these women had to survive, things that they had to do to survive.
It's interesting, and I'm glad you talk about that, because it's very easy to forget that not that long ago, realistically, not that long ago, that just being who we are was illegal. Yeah. And people had to have a strength to commit to who they are. Ray, growing up in an era where it was illegal, it was wrong, and where these women had to have the strength to be, and now, you know, people can look and go, how fabulous was that? But don't forget, they were arrested and bashed.
Yeah, and bashed.
You know, this is, and so I think this probably sounds a bit like, you know, I'm getting too old, but you have to acknowledge the past to feel in the present and know where we're going.
Very much.
And to honour those people and thank them. You know, I think it's important to go, thank you, because...
But also, Mark, because nowadays you've got kids who are being carefully understood.
Yeah.
Who are in primary school.
Yes.
Saying that they feel, that they don't feel that they're in the right body.
And I think...
they're allowed to explore that.
You know, Missy...
Wow, how far have we come?
I'm so glad that you talked about that then. You know, that wasn't something... Because, you know, was it a week ago or a couple of weeks ago, things like the debate in Parliament about religious freedom that turns into, you know, a statement that is about those young people not being okay. And to see, and I get angry about this, to see reports that in Queensland, parents are asked to sign a document that they support particular values that say that gay, transgender kids, that what will not be taught, or they would be expelled if the parents didn't sign it. It's like, are you kidding me? So those people in the 60s, the 70s, the early 80s, we need to thank them for that courage.
And I think as well, listen to their stories. Keep their stories alive, because, you know, some of the stories are just so fantastic that you're sort of like, Monique would say, you know, that's when Shirley Bassey and Sammy Davis Jr. came in, and they were backstage and we chatted, and Carlotta taught her how to move her hands, and all these great stories that you're like,
wow,
this is incredible, you know. Yes. And there is, especially in the gay scene, there is such an ageism, you know, oh, that's the old fart. Oh, it's like, well, hold on. These old farts have got some great stories, and we need to keep those going. So that, you know, we understand that, you know, there was a history before the internet.
Yes.
This is why we're allowed to do stuff.
Yes. This is why we're no longer illegal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, Maxie, we don't know your background, which is unusual for us when we're having a chat on our little show here. Maxie, childhood through growing up to saying, yep, I want to do drag, what were the milestones that led you to that point?
I actually was born in Ballina. And then...
Not quite Byron.
Not quite Byron. not quite Byron. My grandfather used to own a sugarcane farm in Pimlico. And then in 1984, my mother passed away, and my sister and brother and I were adopted by my mum's sister.
Wow.
So my auntie actually became my mum.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we moved up to central Queensland, Claremont, which is out past Emerald, which was a mining town. We used to live just outside of town, very country bumpkins, you know, bore water, all that exciting stuff. Dad used to work, my uncle and auntie and my cousins became my brothers, sisters, mothers and fathers.
How beautiful.
My dad used to work in an open cut coal mine, which started to dry up. So we sold the property that we lived on and moved down to Nowra in 88.
Wow, big change.
So a big change. So high school down there, you know what, it was, as a gay kid, it was probably the best thing that could have happened. Basically, how? Stepping stoned. I studied hospitality at Wollongong. Then I moved up and I was working at Intercontinental. I think it was about 96, 97, they had a Christmas party and I decided to go out and drag the Intercontinental. And then I ended up and I met this guy that I became really great friends with. And we became drag sisters. So I was Maxie Shield and she was Catherine Gorge because she was from the Northern Territory. And we just became sort of drag sisters. We did talent quests. I think I got third. And it went to one day where I was like, actually, you know what? This is what I love to do. And it just sort of snowballed from there. That was the express version. It's been absolutely crazy. I literally sit on the lounge at times and just go, what the hell? How lucky am I? Because, you know, the experiences that I had or have had would not have come about if I was still working at Intercontinental or at a cafe or a restaurant.
At what age did you jump across full-time from ditch that and thought this is my profession?
22, 23.
Wow.
Was that a that would be a
yeah
big
it was
leap.
I'm 48 this year, so it was scary, but I always thought, you know what, if I can get two or three gigs that can cover rent and bills, then, you know, I'm gonna do it. I'm just gonna do it. So it was terrifying, but, you know, I haven't looked back. You know,
it's like that leap of faith in a way.
Terrifying leap of faith. And you sort of see it. And, you know, it is so transferable to, you know, your own business in that, you know, it is so scary to give up your day job and have so much, you know, faith in a business that you love. Mm. Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? You know, and... Yeah, I'm lucky. Touch wood, it worked.
So, Maxie, we talk about it as a business. For most of us, we go to work and we'll put it down at the end of the day, although Mark and I, our work and home life is a big blur. But when do you stop being Maxie Shield and become Chris?
It's exactly like you two.
Yeah.
I think this is the creative side. You can't turn a creative person off. Like, yeah. I will go to the movies. That hairstyle looks great. You know, go to Kmart. I could use that. I can use that. I can use that. So it ultimately never turns off. Mm-hmm. But I'm not one of those ones that my drag persona is a third person thing. My drag is just a glamorous extension of me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do go to work and I know that I have a work mentality in that this is what I've got to do. This is the end result. This makes my money. I need to give the client what they ask for. But, you know, my job is in a social environment, which means that, you know, it's bloody fun. It's so fun to go to work. And yes. I'm sure you two will agree. It's hard at times. It's so hard, but couldn't think of anything else to do.
Well, it's funny. People have said to us, because you get approached a lot, and we know that they're approaching Mitch and Mark from reality TV, and people say to us, does it really annoy you? But it doesn't annoy us because we were given so much, so much opportunity and joy, and were able to change our lives mid-50s. Totally changed our lives. So we feel that it's only fair that we share a bit of that Mitch and Mark with the people who are appreciative of it. And it is a very blurred line. They did see us in our rawest form when we were tired and working our asses off and
maybe
having fun, but also distraught.
Of course.
But we do. We have no problem with sharing, unless it's mid-mouthful at a restaurant. That's what I said.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Let me swallow before you ask me to speak.
At least a drag queen, I'm allowed to say piss off.
Your whole life is generally around performing where people are having beverages.
And I don't drink.
Yes.
Has that always been the case, or is that a
conscious
decision?
Well, I drank in the 90s. I drank a lot in the 90s. And drag drinks are different to normal human drinks. Like, you know, they fill half the glass plus with alcohol and a squirt of Coke or Mixer, and they go, I've made you a good one, girl. And you're like, I've got heartburn. And
and you've got another performance to do.
I need to sit down. My head's giddy. So, yeah, so it's been, I think, about 13 or 14 years that I haven't drunk.
Good for you.
But in saying that, I haven't been drunk. I have had a drink.
Okay.
I have a shot when anyone dies. That sounds so morbid. But, you know, if someone that has passed away that I know and you know, I love, I always get everyone to raise their glass and I always have a shot.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Maxie, I'm curious, as Chris and Maxie, is Maxie able to do things, say things that you would want to say as Chris? Is there a continuum? Is it, you know, does that permit you freedoms, or is it just your glamorous self?
It used to be. I used to think that, you know, drag, I can do a lot more than as a boy. But, you know, as it gone on, I think it's probably maybe 10, 15 years ago, I was like, this is ridiculous. Why can I do something with a wig on and I can't do it as a boy? This is absolutely stupid. And I do sort of sometimes break things down like that. And I was like, this is dumb. I can do anything. If I can do it in drag, I can do this as a boy. And, you know, I've taken that on going forward. So especially coming out of Drag Race, where a lot of times you do have to do interviews as a boy, and it's just like, do I be boring and quiet, and or do I go, ah?
Maxie, I want to go deep. I had a friend, I used to date a guy, and his cousin was Malika. I don't know if you know Malika.
I do know Malika.
Malika was an incredible performer who sang as well. I'd loved watching her. But I remember one time Malika saying that she's a girl, and she called the drag queens clowns. And I don't think she even did. She didn't do it, not in a malicious way either.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a malicious way. She would just sort of say, well, no, they're a painted face. They're not the real, well, not the real thing. I don't know.
But it's an interesting question.
It's an interesting question. For the listeners and for us, is being a drag queen wanting to be a woman, or is it wanting to perform as a woman? What's the difference?
See, that comment, Malika would have done that quite a few years ago.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm talking like
20 years ago.
Yeah. So, and I would add an extra word to clown. I'd actually add glamorous clown.
And I don't think she was being nasty when she said it either.
No, not at all. Malika was incredible. Malika doing Tina Turner.
Oh, my God. Oh. Amazing.
Australia's leading Tina Turner impersonator. Yeah. She's incredible. Especially now, 2022 is different. Gender is so blurred now. And we are finally seeing that drag is just a glamorous extension of the person, or is whatever they feel it is to them. It's very personal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So for me, it was never a trans thing. Mm. I'm not non-binary. I'm not gender fluid. I love to be glamorous and go to work, and I love shiny things, and I don't like if
you've
people...
seen Mitch's fashion, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I don't like that boys aren't allowed to wear something flowy and a dress if they want to. Yet, you know, in other cultures it's very acceptable, but in Western culture it's like, well, hold on, you're a boy, you shouldn't be wearing that. I think that especially fashion should be fluid.
Mm.
And, you know, my one thing about being a drag queen is put a flowing skirt on and do spins in the lounge room. That's going to get you every time, guys, because that is so much fun.
You know, Mitch, you were talking about something, if I can go back to, because I think it is a really interesting question, particularly in the gay community. There's a couple of things that you've spoken about, Maxie, which are really relevant nowadays. And Mitch and I are involved at the moment. We're going to be involved in a program that's around the questions of gender and fluidity and, you know, have the pronouns people use to identify, which is so important because we have friends who are talking about those things with their kids.
Yeah.
It's a challenging thing. It's a hard thing to have that conversation. But as you talked, I thought it's almost drag performers through that history have supported and helped that conversation without knowing that they've helped that conversation, because there is a question people need to ask. What does that mean for me? What does that mean for my children? How do they think about these things? And, you know, I don't know if you've had it. I've known young people in my early years when I was involved with the Gay and Lesbian Counselling Service, you know, way back before it was LGBTQ anything, it was just gay and lesbian,
yeah,
who committed suicide when they were struggling with identity. So as a performer, you love things glamorous and it's fabulous, but it also has supported that conversation, I can't help but think.
Very much. And I think a lot of drag performers, our pronouns, like even as a boy, I don't think I've ever been called he.
Yes.
It's always she. And, you know, and you know, it's always been sort of very fluid. And I think it was making gender for us, like trying to break what society says we should be.
Yes.
I guess. And, you know, blue for boys, pink for girls, which is, you know, very basic, but, you know, it still seems to happen. And as soon as a boy says, oh, that pink shirt's nice, it means he's effeminate. And it's like, well, actually, it's just a colour, guys.
Yes, you know, take away the energy from it.
Yeah, it's just a colour. It's just a skirt.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a strappy sandal. It's just a high heel. If you want to wear a high heel, you can wear a high heel whether or not you're gay or straight or anything. You can wear it. It's okay. It's just a piece of clothing.
Guess I'm talking the same-sex marriage bill. As, you know, we've seen so much, we're talking history, we sound like we're so old, but the history of where we've been, you know, we started in this conversation about some of that history is so important to acknowledge and know because it shapes where we are now and where we think we can go. The same-sex marriage bill, the day that was passed or the experience around it, what was your experience or feeling like when we were doing that referendum?
Well, I started at the end of the 90s. So I got to see things like age of consent rallies, I think the tail end of the adoption rallies as well. So I'd been to those rallies and seen community bind together, you know, drag queens out the front of parliament protesting, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I hadn't seen that for many years going forward. And, you know, the referendum was just a piece of shit. It was just so dumb, really. Mm. And it was a waste of money. We could have got the same result, you know, and given all that money to homeless in Sydney or, you know, built more schools or hospitals or paid our nurses properly. But I did try to find a positive in everything. Mm. And my positive was that there was people that I had only seen in nightclubs. So I'd only seen them in the dingy darkness of a nightclub out on the street in George Street in Sydney and protesting. And I was like, this horrible thing has brought my community together into something that I had when I was younger and made me feel like a part of the community. So as a positive, I was like, this is incredible. Like, we've stood up. We're saying, no, this is wrong. And it's brought everyone together, which is, you know, was a great, absolute great thing.
Mark, I remember walking through Hyde Park and seeing young heterosexual families with their babies in strollers cheering and dancing, and there was probably more straight crowd that we were seeing.
It was the most incredible
than gay crowd. Experience. And some guy set up an illegal DJ set up in the middle of Hyde Park, and it became a party, a dance party. Yeah. All these straight people cheering and celebrating and seeing us as a gay couple and coming and hugging us and saying congratulations. It was just so beautiful. Yeah.
It was interesting as an experience, because it wasn't until going through that, you know, Mitch would look after our eldest grandson at that point. He would look after little Boydie, and we would walk into the city together with Boyd and Pram as the grandparents. And during that debate, I became very aware of, are people looking at us as if something is wrong? Because there were adverts on TV that were suggesting, I think, some of the more radical lobby groups that it would somehow harm children. And I found that, I found it really distressing to think, how dare you think that I would do anything, anything to harm my grandson or my granddaughters?
Or our child.
Or our children. How dare you judge that? You don't know me. But then the second part of it, I guess, Maxie, that it didn't hit me until that night in Hyde Park. And I said to Mitch, I suddenly had this overwhelming, not sadness, but these tears, because it was the first time I suddenly went, I feel that my country actually likes me. I never felt that I fitted in anywhere, because I knew from when I was 8 that I was different.
Yes, and same.
Yeah, same from early, and I never felt I belonged. And suddenly I had a moment where I went, oh, my God, I never realised I felt I didn't belong in my country. And this is the first time that a country has said, we support you. Mm. And I didn't expect that experience.
I just want to do a quick snip into, we spoke about reality, Reno of oneself, but do you have any renovation experience, which can be anything from fluffing a cushion to gutting out a house?
Absolutely not. No. I've had my lips done. No.
I'm a good personal bit of foundation.
But what about at home, Maxie? You, particularly people who rent, say we don't renovate because we rent, but you still have to make a place your nest.
Yeah.
So styling and putting a place together, it is all a form of your renovation.
So my drag room looks like a clown exploded. And threw clothes up at the time. Yeah. we're quite lucky. We've got a 3-bedroom we rent in Darlinghurst. It's very expensive, but we've got 2 dogs as well. So we
Terrace
have
house.
A little courtyard in a very quiet laneway in Darlinghurst. So it is very old, but it's got so much character. The laneway is incredible because, you know, we know everyone. They've got like a community garden next door to our house. But the whole thing is that our lounge room opens into a courtyard. So I've got lots of plants. I grew up in the country. That was maybe my styling aesthetic is plants. So I do love lots and lots of plants. So when my mum comes up from Nowra, she always brings a carload of plants with her. So I think that's my design-esque.
Your design-esque is bring nature in.
Exactly. Bring it in. Bring it in.
All over the place.
And speaking about nature, I want to link straight to the Mardi Gras. There was actually no commonality link there. I just created one. Wasn't
good.
That clever?
Yep.
So Mark and I, for the first time ever, we've watched many a parade and cheered on from the sideline. We're doing a program with Fairy Dishwashing Liquid, and we're going to be appearing on their float.
Fabulous!
I don't know what we're doing. We're just going to be on the float. I don't know what we're wearing. Mark said to them, "I'm not going to wear anything too risque," and I said, "Oh my God, I'm wearing some risque.
I'm 60
in 6 months. I've got to show this body off while it lasts.
I'm going to see, you know, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, when Guy Pearce was on that bus, which is fantastic. Silver. I can see Mitch like that.
So what do we expect from you with Mardi Gras?
For Mardi Gras, I'm working with a campaign with Mini, the new Mini, which is Big, Big Love, I think it is. And, you know, it's a mini car, but there's like Big Love. I'm working, there's three of us. I think there's Alana, the pastry chef, incredible pastry chef, and
Anna. She's a great mate of ours.
She's a friend of ours.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love her. She's a pastry chef. Trust me.
Yeah. And she makes the best stuff. Her cookies. Oh, my God.
And Maxie, just for anyone listening, if you haven't listened, we did a podcast with Anna Polavuk. So yes. Go back and have a listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a podcast with her, Maxie.
Really interesting.
Surely you listened to it.
Yes, of course. Well, of course. I'm sorry, Anna, that I called you Alana. Alana's my contact. And then there's another guy as well. And I can't remember.
It doesn't matter. You would have got the name wrong anyway.
Yeah, I would have stuffed it up.
Maxie and Anna are the most important.
he actually is a judge for, goodness gracious me, it's a renovation show. It's gone.
Not The Block.
It's not The Block, I don't think. It's with
Darren Palmer?
Sorry?
Not Darren Palmer.
No. It's with...
Who it is? Neil Whittaker.
Yeah, Neil Whittaker.
Oh, yes, because he drives a Mini. He's sponsored by Mini.
God, that's
yes.
Hilarious.
Oh, there we go. See, I got it in the end, haven't I?
See, it's all connected. I love it. It's not The Block. It's Neil Whittaker.
Yes. That is so funny.
So we're on their float. So it's going to be lots and lots of fun. Cool. Very colourful. I think it's 60s themed.
Oh, wow. That'd be great. For anyone listening, Mardi Gras is happening now, but the parade is happening on March the 5th. And what does Mardi Gras mean to Maxie Shield?
Mardi Gras to me as a working drag queen means work. work. Everyone wants a drag queen, which is fantastic. You know, I get to share my gay love, you know, pretty much every day of the year. But Mardi Gras, it's just so intensified, and it brings us all together, and it's the one day. Well, it's sort of a month that we get to sort of really shine a light on our community. You know, there's this whole festival of 3 weeks of things that are happening, you know, queer artists putting shows together, queer screen, you know, lots and lots of things happening that usually don't have that opportunity to have a platform. So if you are in Sydney, you know, especially around Mardi Gras time, it's not just a parade and party. There's lots of stuff to happen. So, yeah, it's really important.
That's fabulous. And well, I think you're also going to be in the Adelaide Fringe, is it?
I'm in Adelaide Fringe with Kid Amin. We've got Sisters Down Under tour. So it's our first time in Fringe, and we're shitting ourselves a little bit. But
it's an amazing festival.
As a festival, I'm an Adelaide boy from where.
Oh, are you?
So
such a great festival. Have fun, I recommend anyone attending it.
You'll be part of that delight for people in Adelaide, because to see you perform will be amazing.
Fabulous. I can't wait.
I've got one thing I just wanted to go back to. At the beginning of this conversation, you talked about the magic and how drag over years has changed. There was a magic that happened, and that maybe now that magic's pulled back. I couldn't help but think it's a bit like the royal family. You know, they like to keep certain things magic. You need to keep people intrigued, like the royal family. But there is a bit. I remember back in, you know, the late 90s and 2000s, when you saw certain drag queens and it was magic. You went, I don't know how they do that. Is the magic important?
Yes, very much. I still get excited seeing performers, like drag queens, perform. And I often say that it's easy to go to negativity. And a lot of times with things changing, especially Oxford Street changing, a lot of people are like, the scene's dead, you know, it's not like we used to have it in the 90s, you know, blah, 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 blah. Mm. And I often say to them, there's an 18-year-old, maybe a 17-year-old, you know, they all sneak in, we all did, that are having that same experience that I did walking into the Albury, seeing Trudy Valentine perform on a Saturday night in 1993. And I would just sort of sat there and was like, oh. And there's that same person that's having that now. And that's really important. So it's different. It's still there. There's still magic there.
It's different.
That's different.
Let's flip the table, so to speak. We've asked you a million questions, of which we're very appreciative for you indulging us. But any question you would like to ask us, at all over slather, nothing.
Nothing's off. See, I was going to ask you, how was it going back a second time? But you've answered that already, because that sort of was one thing that sort of interested me. If I do have an opportunity to do reality TV again, is that smart?
Yes.
But, you know, you've sort of answered that. You loved it and it was a better experience than the first one. So,
yeah, I think going back, and if you get the chance to do it again, you obviously know the mechanism and how it works better. I think we really enjoyed our time and just tried to just be us as well. We would do it again. I don't know that I would do a reality thing like SAS or
no way.
That no kind of thing. Way. There's no way. I mean, I can see myself hyperventilating in a that thing you have to crawl through. I couldn't do it.
Or I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Like they bury you in a box and let buddies snakes and spiders.
I think I'd be fine with that.
Really?
I grew up in the country. I grew up in Claremont. It's okay.
Oh, so people listening now, if you have anything to do with Celebrity Get Me Out of Here, Maxi Shield is happy. That would be great.
Imagine a drag queen coming in.
The jungle.
It's time, guys. It's time.
What a great idea. Oh, it's time. Okay, we're looking forward to seeing that, Maxi.
Look forward to seeing you on Maxi's a Celebrity. Get her out of here.
I'll eat an emu anus. It's fine.
I'm not going to go anywhere with that one.
There's a whole routine around that stuff. Maxi, it is so amazing to get to talk to you. We've loved watching your performances over the years. So if anyone is interested in going to Oxford Street, where can they see you?
Coco, Carmen and I are on Saturday nights at the Oxford. Jackson Hyde's and I are on Fridays. And then Sundays, The Park, which was the old Victoria Room on Victoria Street.
Oh, wow.
They've just been renovated. So Coco and I do, the Fannies do brunch. So we call ourselves the Fannies because we've got big bums. But it's so much fun.
And you can get a T-shirt and you can buy the T-shirt.
You can buy the T-shirt, exactly, on Merch Mother.
And it is it's a brunch thing on
Sundays.
The Park.
Yeah.
At bright, like 10 o'clock in the morning.
11 o'clock.
So 11. On Sundays, 11 o'clock at The Park here in Sydney, Victoria Street in Darlinghurst, you can see the Fannies.
The Fannies do brunch, Maxi. Yes.
How good. I highly recommend it. What a wonderful way to spend a Sunday.
Oh, and you know what? They're not shy on keeping your booze topped.
Oh, we have to come. We have to be there. All right. We're going to head down.
Maxi, thank you. It was lovely to have a chat.
And we'll see you on Oxford Street.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, boys, for having me. Have a fabulous Mardi Gras.
Maxi, thank you so much. And let me just say, Mark, Maxi is just very, very, very much full of joy. Notice that when the conversation with Maxi, Maxi's always able to bring it back to a positivity. And see things through a glass three-quarter full kind of spectrum.
Yeah, I love that sort of attitude. You know, the other thing I loved about it, Maxi talked about the magic in the early days of drag and seeing some of those drag performances. Now I remember those way back, the magic that there was in the transformation. We love a little bit of magic.
But also, Mikey, let's just continue that thought as we come along to Mardi Gras weekend this weekend. Let's all think about positivity, about supporting each other, and not beyond the LGBTQI community. Everybody, race, colour, gender, whatever it is, let's just be inclusive and support.
Yeah, let's support that diversity in our community. So we hope that you enjoyed that beautiful, wonderful chat with Maxi. And if you are in Oxford Street sometime and you see a sign for Maxi, you should go and see Maxi.
You'll enjoy it. It'll be a laugh.
Maxi's actually going to be down in Adelaide too. So if you're listening from Adelaide, the Adelaide Fringe, I think Maxi's down there performing. Get a ticket and go and see her.
That's it for us this week. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Reality Reno with Mitch and Mark. And if you enjoyed it, please give us some feedback. And if you're looking for our podcast, it can be found on Acast, Spotify, Apple Play, iTunes, everywhere we find you at podcasts.
We're everywhere right now. Have a great week, everyone. We look forward to joining you next week.
Bye now.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.